You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And happy holidays. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It is, we are live. It's the 27th of December. Solstice is past. Christmas is past. There's still a couple days left in Hanukkah, I believe. I'm not sure what the schedule is on Kwanzaa. Let's see, Festivus is over. Anyway, greetings to our program. A lot going on today that actually, ironically, that we're going to be getting to, particularly what Rick Snyder is up to in Michigan. For our many listeners in Michigan, WDTW Detroit, WGST in Grand Rapids, I'm forgetting the call letters up in Charlevoix, and across the state on Free Speech TV and on XM Sirius. Unemployed are really screwed. Anyhow, and Louise and I had a really interesting experience with the TSA over the weekend that I want to tell you all about. But first, John Nichols is on the line with us. The Washington correspondent for The Nation magazine, TheNation.com, is where he writes. And, John, I understand you are live in Iowa.
We're trying to track down what remains of Newt Gingrich's campaign, Tom.
The rapidly vanishing bus/book tour?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, if there was anybody left who thought that Newt Gingrich was a legitimate candidate, I think the fact that he completely blew the filing for his home state of Virginia and then announced on Christmas Day that it was okay he didn't get ballot status in Virginia. He was going to launch an aggressive write-in campaign there, only to be informed that Virginia doesn't allow write-in votes in primaries.
Right.
It's just so many things have gone so ridiculously bad for Gingrich in the last, you know, 3 or 4 days that I think we can say, honestly, and perhaps a little ahead of the curve here, that the real prospect for next week is that Gingrich might not finish in the top three in Iowa. He might finish fourth, even fifth, as his campaign collapses. But that's a very big deal news-wise. Because that means who gets into that third slot in Iowa could well be sort of a revitalized Rick Perry or
Rick Santorum,
or even a Santorum.
Yeah, I think Santorum is the one guy that has not yet been tarred with a brush that offends right wingers. You know,
and it's a big deal too because here's where it goes. If Iowa sends three people with tickets out. Then you go to New Hampshire, which gets messed up a little bit by the Huntsman candidacy taking votes away from Romney, and gets all complicated up there. Then you head for the South. There's an awful lot of polling that suggests the South is just not going to go for Romney. And if Iowa has produced a candidate who is, you know, say a Santorum, who's got a little bit of, I know it sounds bizarre to say, but a little bit of freshness to him, you could well see a genuine reshaping of this race, and that's why this next week in Iowa, very big deal. A lot of stuff happening, and not just in the narrow horse race stuff.
Santorum may re-grease the race, as they say.
let's be careful where we go. Tom.
You know what I found particularly interesting about Virginia was that you know the Gingrich campaign actually turned in 11,500 voters. And they were Republicans, and they were certified as Republicans. I mean, they were actual Republican signatures. But for the first time in its history, in the past, the Republican Party has looked at these lists and said, are there 10,000 people on here who are registered Republican voters? The answer is yes or no. And in this case, the answer would have been yes. However, now they're using the standards that are going to be used during the national election. This is part of the Republican effort to keep people from voting. And so this time, for the first time in the history of a primary campaign in the state of Virginia, they applied the general election standards, which meant that your address had to be that you signed the ballot petition with had to be identical to the address where you're registered to vote. And I don't know if they're using the little trick that they Republicans often use of, oh, it says AVE and your street is actually Avenue. I don't know if it's that. I'm guessing it's more just people have moved, you know?
Well, there's a lot of stuff going on there, too. They're also using a congressional district rule that means you have to get 400 signatures out of each of the 11 congressional districts in the state.
Right.
What it is it's jumping through hoops. And then this ban on write-in votes,
yep.
Which is, again, a very anti-democratic move. Here's the bottom line on Virginia. Newt Gingrich is one of the first victims of Republican suppression.
Voter suppression,
and,
exactly. That's my point.
And it's more than that, though. He's not alone. So, too, Santorum, Perry, and Bachman and Huntsman didn't make the ballot either.
Yeah, and I'm surprised. You know, I have not seen. Go ahead.
Mitt Romney.
I'm just astounded that this. I'm just astounded this hasn't been like the screaming headline on all the progressive blogs for the last 48 hours. I almost wrote the article myself three times, each time figuring somebody is writing this right now. You know, that the first victim of Republican voter suppression efforts for the 2012 election cycle is Newt Gingrich. And isn't that ironic? And. You know, John, I hope you put the thing up on The Nation today.
Oh, we will. And there's one other thing, too, that's going on that's very significant. The Occupy Wall Street movement, which is very, very strong in Iowa, has last week launched a campaign to get people to vote uncommitted in the caucuses. Today we find out that the Republicans have announced they're not going to count uncommitted votes at the caucuses.
Right.
Changing their own rules. Which has existed back to the 1970s, and uncommitted has often done very well. Uncommitted beat Bob Dole in 1980. Uncommitted beat Alexander Haig in 1988. And so the bottom line is that they are rewriting the rules in Iowa to make sure they're not embarrassed by an Occupy presence at their caucuses.
That's very interesting. Now, the Occupy presence at their caucus is the genuine Occupy movement, or is simply an insurgent movement within the Republican Party? Do you have to be? My recollection is in the Iowa caucuses, you don't actually have to be registered with the party to show up.
When you come to the door, if you sign a paper saying I'm a Republican tonight, you get to caucus.
Right. Okay.
And so independents, others can come, and the Occupy movement, along with a number of other movements. Have sought to encourage people to go to the Democratic and Republican caucuses and vote uncommitted as a signal that they really want a better discussion about the economy and a host of the issues that you talk about on this show. And it's a positive, very thoughtful intervention in the caucus process. And yet we have, obviously it's clear now that the Republicans are going to try and shut it down. It's a very, very undemocratic move. And a real signal of a problem with the caucuses in general, which is that they aren't really open or democratic events. They tend to be constructs of the party.
Yeah.
The Democratic Party seems to be playing by the rules and not trying to shut out the uncommitted votes. The Republicans are saying they won't count them.
Yeah, amazing. On the other hand, you know, a party it's like a club. You know, if I'm a member of a party, this is my club. And that's why for example, I have no problem with the superdelegates that the Democratic Party has. These are people who've spent many, many years in the club. They've committed themselves to the club. And so, you know, they're having an absolute presence there, even if they're not elected at the moment or something like that. I don't have a problem with. So shouldn't a party be allowed to make their own rules?
Well, let's put it this way. First off, I tend to disagree with you, Tom. I tend to be an old school progressive. I believe that party primaries, caucuses should be open. Because they nominate the contenders for the November race. So I'm not as into the club thing as some folks may be. But if we accept that as our construction, then we still got a big problem here because that club had a set of rules right up until a bunch of folks they didn't like said they were going to come to the caucus.
And then they changed the rules.
Changing the rules of the club because you think a result you don't like might occur.
Yeah, that's not fair. I'm not that much of a club guy. Okay.
Good for you, Tom.
John Nichols, Washington correspondent, The Nation magazine, thenation.com. Thank you, John.
Thanks, brother. Great talking to you.
Always great talking with you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So we'll be back. I got to tell you what happened when we said to the TSA this weekend, no, I don't think I want those x-rays.
So when I turn the Washington Mall into a private putting green, you'll vote Republican.
And when I turn Social Security over to a bunch of drunken day traders, you'll vote Republican. And when I drag the nation through 8 years of carnage and incompetence and leave the place a bigger mess than Lindsay Lohan's trailer, then blame the Democrats for cleaning up too slow.
Of course.
You will awake confused, refreshed, somewhat paranoid, and you'll remember nothing. And vote Republican.
There you go. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Your media support group for We the People. Yes. So we spent the weekend in Portland with our three kids and a couple of their significant others. And one, Jeff, I hope you're feeling better. I had the flu. We missed him. But in any case, we had a great time. It was just, you know, and my apologies to all of our other friends in Portland that we didn't get an opportunity to spend time with, because it was just, you know, flew out on Friday, got there at midnight Friday night, and left at 4 a.m. Monday morning. So just, you know, 2 days with our kids. But what's interesting is we hit the airport, and I'm not going to say which one, just, you know, because I'm not – actually, I have to say, I was impressed, and so was Louise, by the demeanor of the TSA people. Their behavior was towards us was entirely professional and reasonable and nice, actually. However, the rules that they were following are clearly set up to punish people who don't want to go through the Chertoff porno X-ray scanners. You know, we're standing in line, put all our stuff in the you know, to go through the X-ray machine. And a woman says, okay, step into the Chertoff X-ray porno scanner. And I said, I'd rather get groped. And actually, my exact words were, I'll take the grope. And so she says, okay, we got an opt-out here. And rather loudly to the guys around, and somebody says, okay, I'll get somebody. And then Louise steps up. She's right behind me in line. And she waves her into the machine. And Louise says, I don't want to go through the machine either. And so she yells, female opt-out! And so we get to stand there, you know, with our hands in our pockets for the next, I don't know, 5-10 minutes while we wait for the person, apparently, who floats around and is in charge of groping people because whatever. Maybe they don't want to distract the people who are running the porno X-ray scanners, or they want to make sure that they get high levels of radiation so that they, you know, die of cancer. This Republican conspiracy to kill off the unionized TSA. I don't know what it is. But in any case, we had to wait 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 minutes until finally somebody came. Actually, the woman who could do Louise came over earlier. And then I stood there for a long time. And everybody was like, you know, oh, why are you standing here? What's the deal? They didn't make me hold up the line. I've heard horror stories about actually holding up the line. They let people go past me who wanted to go get scanned, who wanted to get X-rayed. But I'm standing there looking like an idiot, or looking like the guy who's not going along, right? And then finally, a fairly decent guy, like I said, a nice guy, comes along and says, you know, you're the opt-out. And I said, yeah. And he says, okay, come with me. And he takes me through a regular metal detector like I went through to see, you know, I almost felt like saying, you know, 3 weeks ago, I had dinner with Joe Biden. And I went through a metal detector just like this, but nobody groped me and nobody asked me to walk through a porno scanner. And 8 or 12 weeks ago, I had dinner with the president of the United States, and I walked through a metal detector, but nobody groped me and nobody asked me to walk through a porno scanner. What the hell is up with you, buddy? But I didn't. I just kept my mouth shut. You know, I'm only trying to get on an airplane. I realize that, you know, getting on an airplane, much more critical thing, much more dangerous thing. You know, much more higher risk here than having dinner with the president or vice president. So anyhow, then we get on the other side and it's the whole thing, right? I mean, it's the full Monty. It's everything except the body cavity search, you know, and, you know, maybe someday that will come. I mean, it makes perfect sense. As I've said many, many times, if somebody wanted to smuggle some C4, some plastic explosive enough to take down an airplane, they could very easily do it inside their body. It would occupy about the same amount of space as we are speaking at this moment. There is cocaine or diamonds or both being smuggled inside somebody's body, inside their body cavities, somewhere in the United States, certainly all around the world, but probably almost cocaine almost certainly in the United States, or heroin or something else. And, you know, the Chertoff porno x-ray scanner will not find it, and the grope will not find it. So what's next? Body cavity searches. Anyway, so they went through all our bags, and they went through everything, and they went through us, and they, you know, and the guy was nice, you know, he explained, I'm going to use the back of my hand, sir, don't worry, and, you know, I'm fine, you know. I'm smiling through the whole thing. I'm not going to be a PETA. You know, I realize this is just a guy who's doing his job. I just didn't want the x-rays. Really simple. I was astounded watching people like send their kids through these things. I would never send my child through an x-ray machine. I don't care. I don't give a, I don't care what they say. I mean, I'm old enough to have seen this. When I was six, seven years old, walking home from kindergarten or first grade, there was a shoe store. As I recall, it was a Buster Brown's shoe store. And they had one of these x-ray machines in there, and you could walk in and stick your feet in it, wiggle your toes, and watch your bones and your toes wiggle. And I used to walk by this thing, and, you know, like once a week or so, me and my friends would go in, and they'd let us look at our feet on the x-ray machine. It was so cool. And then they took them off the market in, like, 1958 or something like that, because they discovered they're killing people with x-rays! So... And the Chertoff porno x-ray scanners, I mean, they've made Michael Chertoff a millionaire. He's the main lobbyist who sells these things to the TSA and the airports and things. But they will not allow the results of the testing of these things to be made public. And they will not allow independent institutions like Underwriters Laboratory or whatever to examine these things. And you got the TSA workers in Boston, we did this story a couple months ago saying, hey, we're showing cancer clusters here from people who stand next to these machines all day long. These machines are just throwing up radiation all over the place. So anyhow, did anyone else opt out like me? What was your experience? How did you feel? And do you think that this might be why travel is down 10% this year on airplanes?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
What do you think? They said air travel is down 10% this year. I think it's the x-ray porno scanners. Maybe it's just me. I don't know.
I went to the airport to catch my flight. The TSA put me in the naked body scanner line. I don't want radiation, so I opted out. But when they grabbed my man junk, I couldn't help myself. I had to shout, I had to shout, I had to get my message out. I said, don't touch my junk.
Helping you with the water cooler wars. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. By the way, did I mention that the European Union has banned the Chertoff porno x-ray scanners? The entire European Union. They are illegal in Europe. So I'm standing here in this line. I'm the guy. He's the one who's opted out. Got to get a special security guy over here. Sue's in the chat room. S-O-C-Z says, oh, Tom, I love those feet x-ray machines. You could wiggle your toes and see the bones moving. Right. Yeah, me too. Actually, they were fun, you know, for a six-year-old, but I'm amazed I still have feet. In fact, our daily poll question of the day, and then I'm going to pick up your phone calls here in just a second. Our daily poll question of the day, did you go through the Chertoff porno x-ray scanners as part of your air travel? Possible answers, yes, I don't mind being x-rayed, or no, I submitted to the body groping just like Tom Hartman. So you can leave your comment there, and I'll read them later. By the way, did I mention the x-ray Chertoff x-ray porno scanners are banned in Europe? Yeah, I think I did. I don't know if you saw this. Last week, we had a guest on our TV show who is the author of a peer-reviewed study that found that in the weeks after Fukushima went down in Japan, that deaths among children under 1 year of 1 year of age and adults with compromised immune systems, in other words, the people who are very fragile and susceptible to death, a number that over the last decade has declined 2%, jumped up. I think it was 6%. It's my recollection. It might have been 8%. But there's been this increase, at least 14,000 deaths in the U.S. attributable to the radiation from Fukushima. And they want me to walk through an x-ray machine at the airport. Thanks, but no thanks. Go ahead and grope me. Luke in Grand Rapids. Hey, Luke, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
Just great.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. And the same to you.
Hey, it's funny. I'm a conservative, and yet I agree with you on this point. I was actually in Denver recently, and I didn't quite say go and grope me, but I did wait for probably 20 minutes. I was worried I was going to miss my flight, but the guy was friendlier than anything else. It was almost like a grandpa the way he talked to me and treated me. But then when I was moved around and he had to get himself all together and put his gloves on and everything, I looked back at the scanner and I noticed that the screen wasn't what I expected. And I don't know if you've seen the update, but they're all, if a person's good, it's all green. And if they're not good, it's all green, but then there are, blotches of red if something is.
I haven't seen that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so he also educated me on that. So I love it that people are inherently pretty good, but it's just the bureaucracy, the TSA, that's definitely.
Yeah.
Well,
it's the rules were set up to punish you for not using the Chertoff porno scanners. Because, in my opinion, for a couple of reasons. Number one, Michael Chertoff wants to make his $34 million. Number two, there's a whole industry that wants to make money on this, and they want to bring it to the train station next. And number three, frankly, what I'm seeing in the United States, and as a conservative, I'm guessing you'll probably agree with me on this too, is the pacification of the populace. We are being turned into a nation of sheep. And I'm just astounded that people are willing to put up with the assumption that you're guilty when the Constitution, the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, explicitly says you are innocent unless somebody swears under oath that they have evidence that you've committed a crime, and a judge determines that swearing under oath constitutes probable cause that you're a criminal. In which case, then they can go through they can grope your junk.
I know. I guess what's funny too is this is another point I think we could agree on, especially with the next election coming up, and it'd be fun to talk about politics, but I think we could also agree on that the lobbyists on both sides, every politician is nearly culpable for bribes the whole time. So what I'm saying is, I don't know where you're at with Obama, but I know he's an establishment.
First of all, I have some ambivalence about Obama, but I'm concerned about the Supreme Court. So and he's done some okay stuff. But the fact of the matter is that he's out there doing fundraisers every week. We have a system that is totally corrupted by money, and it was not the choice of a Republican or a Democratic president. In fact, Republican presidents like Dwight Eisenhower warned us against this. Democratic presidents have been warning us about this ever since the 1880s. I mean, arguably Thomas Jefferson was the first Democrat to warn us about it. And we have a system, and it's brought to you by the Supreme Court. The whole concept of, corporations as people or money as speech is a doctrine made up of whole cloth by the Supreme Court, has nothing to do with the Constitution, and was never written into law by anybody except the Supreme Court. And it's insane that you got nine guys, men and women in black robes down the street from me here, who think that they run this country, and who in fact do, who have final say over our laws, and it's not in the Constitution.
This is where we can bridge the gap together, Tom. I mean, typically, we're always dividing each other apart, and I think you do a good job, and I do a good job once in a while. But this is where we can come together. Yeah. We agree that lobbyists control our country.
Right, and we've got to fix it, and we've got to change it, and the change is only going to come. It's not going to come from the Republican or Democratic Party. Although I can tell you that I've talked with Republican politicians and Democratic politicians in private moments off the record, and I've had both tell me that they are absolutely horrified by the fact that they have to spend at least half of every single day fundraising, and that they can't even do it from their offices on the Hill. They've got to rent a separate office to do it from. They hate it. Mm-hmm. Republicans and Democrats, they hate it. Nobody likes having to be bribed. Nobody likes having to beg for money. Nobody. And in a heartbeat, this is why both Republicans, McCain-Feingold was John McCain and Russ Feingold, right? The most conservative Republican and the most liberal Democrat in the U.S. Senate at the time voted for McCain-Feingold to try to get money out of elections. And the Supreme Court struck it down in Citizens United. So, I think that on both sides, there is a horror about this. I think both sides are corrupted by it. And frankly, we need to amend the Constitution. Move to amend.org is my recommendation. And I think that, and that's totally nonpartisan. You will find a lot of Democrats who are. Luke, let me get some more calls in here. I got to move along. Thank you for the call. Great to hear from you, and nice to hear from a conservative. Bob in San Jose, listening on Green 960. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Yes. I used to work at SLAC, the Stanford Linear Accelerator Center, and we had some things called TLDs, thermoluminescent dosimeters, which are little pieces of plastic. And what somebody could do is design an experiment using some of those little pieces of plastic. There's various kinds of plastic used for this, and find out how much radiation those things actually give you.
Oh, that's interesting. So you basically you'd slap a piece of plastic on you, like it could be like the equivalent of a piece of duct tape.
Pocket. And this little thing in your pocket has a couple different little pieces of plastic in it, so it looks like a stick of gum or something.
Right, but it lights up when it's hit by radiation.
Later on, when they process it, they can tell you how much
what
kind of energy it had.
Here's how I think it should be done, Bob. We need to find something that luminesces that lights up when it's hit with X-rays. Okay, and we need to make T-shirts out of it.
I'm sure that electronics would indicate it, but the problem is that they would say, "Oh, no metal, you want
something that instantaneously luminesces and that is non-metallic, and in the presence of X-rays. And you put on a T-shirt made of this stuff. You step into the Chertoff X-ray porno machine, and all of a sudden, everybody standing around is watching your whole body. It's like, wait a minute. Oh, fascinating.
Well,
Bob.
Those are called phosphors. We already have those.
That's right. Phosphors does that.
And stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's on the front of the old TV tubes, you know? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So why don't we here's a product idea.
No, see, the TLD is a thing that gives you a numeric.
No, I realize it's a scientific instrument, and it's for determining the actual doses. I'm talking about street theater as opposed to science here.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think maybe we should do both, but I think the actual doses are significant, and they're not telling us.
Yeah.
And that bothers me a lot.
There you go. I'm with you. Thanks a lot, Bob. Great to hear from you. Bruce, you had an experience in the Milwaukee airport.
Yeah, hi. I'm Levin Petaluan. I went to Milwaukee for a school reunion last month, or a couple months ago. And when I left San Francisco, I sidestepped the machine, and they were kind of nice. They said, okay, go stand over there. And I had to wait a little. It was a little inconvenient, but the guy was very polite, and I complimented him on how polite he was and gentle he was. You know, he didn't grab me too bad. And when I left Milwaukee, they were really rude, and they wanted me to go into that machine. I mean, it was like, hey, buddy. You know, and they insulted me, and these made comments to each other.
Huh.
And I had to wait. You know, it was like, okay, screw you. You're going to wait. you know, and it was really stupid and obvious.
Yeah, yeah. They're getting, you know, there's a lot of pressure. Put people through the X-ray machines. I mean, they've been banned in Europe. Don't tell anybody about that. And
that's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, this is just 3 weeks ago. The European Union banned them altogether. Just said, you know, sorry, you have not demonstrated to us these things are safe. At the same time, there was an article in USA Today about how these Chertoff X-ray porno scanners are probably going to produce a small number of cancers in the United States, maybe a half a dozen or a dozen annually. Your risks are low.
Regular travelers.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just vulnerable people. I mean, you know, somebody who's like, you know, one cell away from skin cancer, and all they need is. You know, I mean, it's
true.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Bruce, thank you very much for sharing your experience. I'm sorry to hear that the airport people treated you poorly. I don't know. Maybe they're just. I might as well say the airport. I mean, they didn't actually have any Chertoff Porto X-ray scanners at the Washington D.C. airport on the way out. That's where congressmen fly out of. But in Portland on the way back. Nothing but. And that's where they were nice to me, but still, they got the scanners.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Don't you find that interesting? You fly out of Washington Airport and no X-ray scanners. Up next, Full Monty. Meanwhile, Tampa's looking for nudes. Stay tuned. Plus your calls. Through the Chertoff X-ray porno scanner. Hey, baby, take off your coat. It's our full Monty alert for the day. Yes, a town in Florida has a nude beach, West Florida community, and they are looking for nudists. So they put an ad, panda bear. They put an ad in a European publication going to European nudists. The first targeted marketing ad campaign for the ad campaign will be Germany, which, according to Panda Bear's application, is a large and lucrative market whose millions of nudists are among the world's most prolific travelers. Do they mind going through the Chernoff X-ray porno scanners? Well, they don't have them in Europe, so I guess they don't have to worry about it. Louise and I used to live in Germany, and I could tell you from personal experience that Germans love to take their clothes off at the beach and elsewhere. Anyhow, why don't Americans... I don't know. I think, Queen Victoria. Anyhow, come on, Americans, get over it. If they want nudes, they should poach them from the Chernoff X-ray porno scanner machines. Right? There you go. You don't need to have actual nudists. Well, actually, what they want is their travel dollars. Ron in Springfield, Mass. Let's see on WHMT. Hey, Ron, what's up?
How you doing there, Tom?
Great. What's up?
I opted out this summer when I went down to Florida because I had prostate cancer 4 years ago. So I thought it was logical not to submit to any radiation any more than I need. So I was traveling with my brother who is terminally ill with cancer. And unfortunately, he didn't opt out. But I had the same experience as you. They make you wait 5 or 10 minutes. And I was quite upset because I lost track of my brother. And, when they search you and, you put all your stuff back, I was, wondering what happened to my brother because I could not see him anywhere around.
Right.
And apparently they took him to a back room because they detected metal in his chest, and they wanted to check that thoroughly. So I ended up leaving my $2,000 laptop where I was because, I was kind of focused
frazzled
on where he was.
Yeah.
And, to me, there's got to be a better way. And, it just wasn't right to go through that kind of an experience.
Yeah, this is theater. This is security theater. I mean, it's just that simple. Thank you, Ron, for sharing your story. As I've said many, many times, and I will continue saying, if somebody wants to take down an airplane by being a passenger, first of all, I think 90% of what's going on at the airport is absolutely unnecessary, because if somebody tries to take down an airplane in a way that doesn't involve really, really good subterfuge, in other words, if somebody goes after a flight attendant with a belt buckle that's been sharpened into a blade or something, I mean, it's still conceivably possible to smuggle box cutter blades on, small enough one probably wouldn't even be noticed by a metal detector or whatever. The passengers will take you down. It's happened a dozen times since 9/11, at least, where people have acted badly, rudely, suspiciously, drunkenly, or whatever, and the passengers tackle them. And so, I'm not afraid. I'm just not afraid. I'm trusting my fellow passengers. And B, if somebody's really dedicated to doing it, A, they can just ship the stuff because they're not, they're only checking a small portion of what goes into the belly of the plane. Or B, as I said, they could stuff it in a body cavity, go into the bathroom, pull it out, and ignite it. And it's just, it's not like I'm telling national security secrets on the radio. I mean, common sense tells you that. Mike in Los Angeles. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, I've flown out of LAX, Los Angeles Airport, a couple of times every year since the attempt to bomb it about a decade ago. Mm-hmm. It's the only large airport I know that was the target of a foreign terrorist bomb plot, and yet I have yet to see a Chertoff porno scanner, which makes me wonder whether there is any security motive behind the use in the first place.
That's interesting. Are you a frequent flyer?
Well, just a couple of times a year, vacation,
oh, okay,
and family reunions, both domestic and foreign.
Yeah, because I'm, the reason I ask is because I'm a, 1K, it's the top of the line on United, and I've got 2 million miles in Delta, and so whenever I fly, I get the special line, the VIP line, basically, and that's where Louise and I were, and in that line, there were no, and this is in D.C., this is at Washington National Airport, Reagan National Airport. There were no porno scanners at all. I mean, they physically didn't have one there. And I thought, okay, these are the lines that would be used by members of Congress. These are the lines that are used by VIPs. These are the lines that are used by people who are flying on first-class full-paid tickets. And they don't have to go through the porno scanners. And by the way, those 18, 19 guys who took down the buildings, they were all flying first class. So it's like, wait a minute, what's the logic here? I don't get it.
Yes, as you observe, they used a method which no longer will work.
Right, yeah. What we're talking about here is theater, as I said. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Chris in Seattle. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to relay a story. I'm nervous. I'm a cabinet maker, and we did some installation work at SeaTac Airport. Just how easy it is to get in. We pulled up in our van with our full bag of tools, which included, you know, box cutters, all sorts of metal objects. And we were basically waved through the gate. They didn't check what was in our van. They took us on the tarmac up to the, where the airplanes are. I was feet away from an airplane. And the only person that vouched for us was the kiosk owner. We went up into the terminal with our tool bag, and they were laying right there in the open for anybody really to walk by and grab anything out of. So I just wanted to
kind of relate. It's security theater. You know, and I think, frankly, the terrorists, you know, to the extent that there's any left, and I'm sure there are all over the world, they're probably looking at other things. You know, they're trying to get dirty bombs, or they're thinking about how can we put something in a water supply. Or, you know, now that they know that the original plan that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed had was to fly a plane into the Indian Point nuclear power plant, the spent fuel pool next to it near New York City, which would have rendered New York City uninhabitable for 100,000 years. And he chose not to because he assumed there were surface-to-air missiles. Now that they all know that there's no surface-to-air missiles there, oh, God, don't even go there. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends, to the second hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you. And back home from home for Christmas. Louise and I spent the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, with our three kids in Portland, Oregon. And I was telling the story about going through the airport. I will come back to that in a little bit. And how we said, no, we're not going to take the X-ray machines. Thank you very much. They've been banned in Europe. You can just go ahead and grope us. And I'll tell you our whole experience with that in a bit. But the other thing that I thought was really interesting that happened just before we left. We flew out on Friday. We flew back on Monday. So the last day that I was live on the air was Thursday of last week. And that Thursday night, Fox News called, or Fox Business News, and said, would you come on with David Asman and talk to him about Medicare? And I was like, you know, okay, sure. So what I discovered is, you know, remember, it's been, I think, about 2 weeks or so when Ron Wyden came out and said that he's going to the Democratic senator from Oregon, my senator, theoretically, one of my two, said that he's going to work out a deal with Paul Ryan, and he's going to support Paul Ryan's plan to turn Medicare from a single-payer, government-funded, very simple, straightforward system into one that is voucherized and has private health insurance companies and lots of greedy CEOs in there and all this other kind of stuff. And I said, you know, this is nuts. And I said, not only has Ron Wyden gone off the rails on this, but this will be the Republican talking point going into the 2012 election. Is you've got Democrats on this. So how can you say that only the Republicans want to destroy Medicare? You've got Democrats. And they'll always put an S at the end, even though so far Ron Wyden is the only guy, to the best of my knowledge, out of all the Democrats in the House and Senate, to say that he's there with Paul Ryan. And I predicted the day that this happened that one of two things was going to happen. Either one, Ron Wyden was going to realize what a horrible, god-awful, I'm lacking metaphors that I can say on the radio. Mistake this was, and he was going to instantly retreat from it, which is what I frankly expected. I expected the first day that Ron Wyden would, you know, get all these phone calls from people going, "You're going to do what to Medicare? You're joining the Republic. You're joining Paul Ryan in doing what?" That Ron Wyden would just say, "Okay, I'm out of here," or that Fox News would use Ron Wyden as a representative of all the Democrats and use it to beat up on anybody who dares to mention Medicare. And here I am, the clip number two, David, or excuse me, Jacob, David Asman and me on Fox Business News talking about Paul Ryan's plan.
Paul Ryan's plan would not affect anybody who is 55 and over.
Those people are eventually going to be in their 50s, 60s, 70s,
oh,
and 80s.
Oh, but it doesn't say that in the ad. It shows Paul Ryan pushing an 80-year-old off the cliff. Come on. I mean, they're suggesting that he's about to rip up Medicare. He's not. He's offering people a choice.
No, he isn't. What he's doing is he's eviscerating Medicare. And this
Tom,
is what the
hold
Wall
on a second,
Journal
Tom. You're absolutely wrong. You're giving bad information out. Not only does Paul Ryan say he's offering people a choice, but Democrats say that as well. Democrat Wyden, Senator Wyden, hold on a second. Senator Wyden from Oregon is a Democrat, and he is now with Paul Ryan. He is now with Paul Ryan saying that individuals should have a choice. If they like the old system, they stay with the old system. If they don't, they go to the new voucher-oriented system.
Yeah, and Ron Wyden has become a complete useful idiot for the Republicans on this.
Wow.
No
that
other
puts
Democrat
you so far to the left,
him.
Though. Paul Ryan no, is a center, a Democratic center from a liberal state. Where does that put you?
Oh, I must be a communist. That must be it, or a socialist, or, you know. No, there is not a single other Democrat who agrees with Ron Wyden that we should voucherize Medicare. These major accomplishment of the Democratic Party in the 1960s. That stands to this day, regardless of the fact that the Republicans put this poison pill in it. Well, here's where I get to the poison pill, clip number three.
Is Medicare in trouble or not?
Medicare is in trouble largely because of the poison pill that was put in by Republicans during the Bush administration of saying,
please,
we're going to give drugs, but we're not going to pay for it, and we're going to force
Medicare
the government to buy
has
full
been,
retail.
Medicare has been bleeding money for the past 30 years. It's going to double in
not
size
in
by 2020
fashion.
To more than $1 trillion a year. Medicare is in serious trouble. If you do nothing with Medicare, it is going broke long before
you and I both know that those assumptions, A, are not accurate.
Of course
they're based on the
they're based
on the
fact that Medicare is losing money hand over foot, Tom.
And they're operating the assumption that $600 billion over the next decade is going to be handed off to the pharmaceutical companies because Medicare is not allowed to negotiate.
But I can tell you that there's got to be some fix or this thing's going broke soon.
Yeah, yeah. And then he gets back to Wyden. Clip four has Wyden in it too, right? Yeah. Okay, here he gets back to Ron Wyden, clip four.
There needs to be a fix. And the fix does not need to be that we turn it into a voucher program and we say to 80-year-olds, here's nine different companies, figure out which one you're going to go to. And by the way, eight of them won't cover you because you got a pre-existing
condition.
You have
a choice, Tom. You have a choice. You can either choose the old system or you can take the voucher system. A lot of people like to, this may surprise you, a lot of people like to control their own lives instead of hand them over to the government.
Do you really believe, David, that there's any health insurance company in America that's going to take an $8,000 voucher and
say,
okay, 70-year-old with pre-existing condition?
You better believe
condition.
I believe it.
That's my point.
You better believe
no, there won't be
that's
money to be
That's why
made.
The Democrats like Wyden agree with it. Because they do, they've done the cost analysis. They realize that there is a market for a separate system.
Wyden has gone off the rails.
I don't want the government to deny me the choice to choose the benefits I want.
David, regardless of their age, people can try to buy
it. And then I went on to say, you know, the Koch brothers are over 65, and I guarantee you they're not just using Medicare. Anybody can buy health insurance right now. Anybody has a choice if they have the money, which is what this is going to be. Because, you know, here's a voucher that'll cover $8,000. Oh, you've had a bypass surgery? Oh, wow. Good luck. Oh, incredible. So this is Fox Business News, David Asman, testing on me, the punching bag liberal of the day over at Fox News, testing the, we're going to use Ron Wyden's asinine, stupid, insane, over-the-edge, useful idiot status in getting into bed with Paul Ryan. We're going to use that. We're going to test that against, you know, actually somebody who actually argues progressive points of view for a living and see what happens. And what can I say? He kept saying Democrats with an S. You get that? Right up to the very end. And that's why Democrats like Ron Wyden have done the math and they've seen. And that's why Democrats like Ron Wyden believe in personal choice. And I'm like, yeah, you really think that a health insurance company is going to say to a 75-year-old with heart disease and high blood pressure, sure, we'll take your $8,000 voucher and cover you? No. No, ain't going to happen. Oh, but Ron Wyden says it will. Oh, jeez. So, please, Senator Wyden, you know, you've fought the good fight on a lot of good issues. You've been a very, I supported Ron Wyden for years and years, and still do, by and large. I think he's a good senator. He's one of the good Democratic senators. And he's a good and decent man. He's been, Senator Wyden, if I may speak directly to you, you have been suckered on this thing. And you need to extract yourself from it as fast as you possibly can. And if you have anybody on your staff who helped talk you into this, you need to fire that person before the end of the day today.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour. We'll be back. Did you go through a Chertoff x-ray porno scanner this weekend? I did. Did not.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody. Everybody. Come take my hand. Come take my walk.
20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Talk media for the sane among us. And I just wanted to point out, this is the final, we're doing last week and this week, this, you know, the holiday season, before the end of the year, your opportunity to help our favorite charity, and favorite because Louise and I actually started it, the Salem Children's Village and the Hunter School, Salem Children's Village and Hunter School. In particular, Hunter School right now, we're trying to raise money to, well, we are actually, but a lot of you have responded, and thank you for that. Raising money for both the program itself and also we have a summer program there. And this is a program for kids who are really the kids who have fallen through the cracks and who are the most difficult, the kids that, you know, no public school can handle and most private schools won't go near. The kids who have been diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome and or ADHD and typically oppositional defiant disorder, which is a fancy way of saying they can get violent or angry or upset or whatever, and kids who are facing really, really serious challenges in life. And our school program really helps these kids. And in fact, I've read last week, and I'll read some more tomorrow and the next day, letters from parents saying, your program saved my child's life, and nobody else, you know, when we've been through everything else, nothing else worked. And you can read all about it at hunterschool.org, and that's where we're asking you to make the donations. With a $250 donation, we'll send an autographed copy of the Tom Hartman Reader. And Louise and I had a long conversation about this and decided, you know, typically we don't, we're kind of private people. But I think this is kind of a cool idea. With any donation of $1,000 or more, we'll take you to dinner here in Washington, D.C. You'll have to get here, but we'll take you to dinner with a donation of $1,000 or more. And in fact, we will take you to the studios where we record our TV show in the evening, and you can stand in the back of the control room, which is like, you know, standing in the Starship Enterprise, and watch the show, watch us record the show, and then after the show, that's when Louise and I typically have dinner. It's around 9 o'clock at night. And so we'll take you to the show, and we'll take you to dinner, and I'll pick up the tab for dinner. And so free meal with Louise and me for a $1,000 gift or more given to Hunter School, hunterschool.org. And you can give them online, or you can send a check and just, you know, let us know. But we're gonna go back through all the gifts that have already been given, and any that are over $1,000, we'll make that offer to them. And any time in the next year, by the way. So, you know, if you plan on, you know, coming to Washington, D.C., summer vacation, what, as long as we're in town. The Hunter School is an extraordinary program. Salem Children's Village is actual pronunciation, but Salem Children's Village, extraordinary programs for what Herr Mueller, my mentor, the man who founded this program in Germany, and we modeled it after. SalemInternational.org, by the way, is the website for the German program, the international program, if you'd like to see that. But it's just an extraordinary program. And Herr Mueller always used to say to me and to others, we need to help the least of the least. I remember one morning, I wrote about this in my book, The Prophet's Way, when I first went over to Germany in 78 and met him. And I woke up one morning about 5 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. The sun was just starting to come up, and I was kind of jet-lagged, wide awake. And I looked out the window, and it had rained the night before. And here's Mr. Mueller, who I was in my late 20s at that time. He was in his 60s. Here's this guy running up and down this fairly steep road, picking things up off the street, almost frantically, you know, quickly, anyway. And I thought, oh, I you know, something's wrong. And so I threw my clothes on, and I ran up, and here he was picking up worms off the street and putting them in the grass. And I said, what are you doing? And he said, we have to get them off the street before the cars come, because the cars will squish them. And I said, you're picking up worms? And he said, of course. We have to save their lives. When in Uganda, during the war with Idi Amin, when the resurgence kind of flared back up and the Red Cross was getting shot at. In fact, I met a woman in the name of Anne, a Red Cross volunteer or worker in Uganda who was shot and killed. I met her before she was shot and killed. But anyhow, when the Red Cross pulled out, Herr Mueller called me up and he said, okay, everybody else has pulled out. We must go in. And that's when I went into Uganda. And, you know, I've written about this. I don't want to go through the whole thing, but in fact, it's in that chapter's in the Tom Hartman Reader, the book that you'll get with a gift of over $250 to hunterschool.org, is the actual story of my experience in Uganda, my diary basically that I kept. But he always said, our work is with the least of the least, referencing Matthew 25, where Jesus said, you know, as you have done unto the least of the least, you've done unto me. The most difficult kids, the most challenged kids. The thing that astounds me the most is Louise and I spent Thanksgiving up at Hunter School this year, a couple of weeks ago, you know, 4 or 5 weeks ago. And these kids diagnosed with Asperger's or autism or ADHD or what, you know, or sometimes they've got, you know, long, long collections. Sometimes no diagnosis, they just, you know, they're whatever, are some of the brightest kids you'll ever meet. They have tremendous potential. They just need somebody to bring that potential out. And these are kids who are at the end of their rope, and they need your help. So we're trying to raise money. We're raising money this week for the Salem Children's Village and Hunter School. Go to hunterschool.org. And or SalemChildrensVillage.org. You can find links to each from the other. And both of them have a donate page. And if you can, you know, $10, $15, it's all very, very helpful. With a $250 gift, we'll send you an autographed copy of the Tom Hartman Reader. And with a $1,000 gift, Louise and I will take you to dinner on our nickel here in Washington, D.C.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So, up next, a bunch of callers on the TSA. Oh, my. Did you get groped this weekend? I got groped, but I didn't get irradiated. Four minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, speaking the truth to multinational corporations. We'd really rather you didn't know all about. Susie is how Scooze was pronounced. Thank you for correcting me in the chat room, and my apologies for mispronouncing your name. And Snorky2K in the chat room says, is there a place to send Tom a real-time plastic radiation detector, europium-doped quartz and polypropylene? I think I'll pass. Thank you for the offer. It's very kind. But, for the first time in probably 15 years, I have flown fewer than 100,000 miles in a year, and so next year I will lose my 1K frequent flyer status. I was 1K for 8 or 9 years on United, and before that I was million miler and or whatever they call it. What was the top? Platinum on Delta for, geez, decade and a half. And I just, you know, when they came in with the shirt off porno scanners, I literally called the airline and I said, you know, I'm not going to hit 1K this year. And just letting you know, the reason why is because airport security has become it's a theater that is painful to experience. And I don't think it's making us safer. In fact, if anything, I think it's the opposite. It's giving us a false sense of security. So. And then somebody makes a note here regarding Ron Wyden. Tom, I can't believe you don't realize, this is from our chat room, that Wyden doesn't have to run until 2016. He isn't young, but he has a young family. Do you think he's looking for a gig as a lobbyist when he gets out? Well, you know, that hadn't occurred to me. I guess we'll find out in 2016. But in the meantime, a lot of damage is being done to the Republican Party, or to the Democratic Party, excuse me. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number, and Kate in Santa Fe. Hey, Kate, what's up?
Oh, hello, Tom. I wanted to talk about the searches that are going on outside of the airports. I frequently travel Amtrak, which is, by the way, in danger of losing that.
Yeah, the Republicans want to do away with it. Well, the Chinese have 10,000 miles of high-speed rail. We have zero, and the Republicans want to do away with Amtrak. I mean, how insane is this? Anyhow, back to you.
Yes, I did digress. But I wanted to talk about the searches because on my last trip through Albuquerque coming from California back to Santa Fe, in Albuquerque, the ATF got on the train, the INS got on the train, the New Mexico Sheriff got on the train, and they had dogs. They went to all the passengers that were sitting there, sitting on the train waiting to proceed on the trip. They asked everybody for identification, where they were traveling to, where they were traveling from. May we see search your luggage? Is that your luggage there? Who's sitting across from you, if somebody was off the train at the time?
Wow.
And this happened to me, by the way, on a Greyhound bus as early as 2002. I refused to show my identification to ATF agents on a bus full of people,
right.
And I refused to show my identification to INS on a bus full of people. I was pulled off the bus. All of my things were taken off the bus. I had to wait 24 hours for the next bus because it went away without me, and I had to pay $10 extra because my ticket, I didn't use my ticket, and I had to reuse it. I wanted to reuse it, and it was at Christmas time of 2002. I lost all the gifts that were in all my bags. I reported, I filed claims, nobody could ever find my bags again. And I'll tell you, I am as straight and as vanilla as they come, and I had nothing in there other than fruit.
I got it, Kate. Kate, it's a horrible story. Thank you for calling and sharing it with us. I mean, the closest I've been to that was in the late 70s, early 80s, when Louise and I, well, actually it was in 86, when Louise and I lived in West Germany. And we took the train with our kids who lived with us. I mean, you know, all five of us lived in West Germany. Took the train to Berlin, which meant we had to go through East Germany. And the train, when we passed into East Germany, the guards got on with the dogs, and they came through and they sniffed. And one of our kids pulled out a camera, and they threatened to arrest us for pulling out a camera. And it's like, have we become like East Germany used to? I mean, East Germany isn't even like East Germany anymore. It's now Germany. I mean, you know, it's like, oh man, Have we really sunk that far? Jim in Somerdale, Ohio. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, how you doing? Thanks for getting the word out. I was watching your show last week with Bernie on Friday,
mm-hmm.
and it came to my attention. I was reading something. The 26th Amendment only took 3 months and so many days have passed. Why is this move to amend going to take so long with all the people behind it?
I don't think it's going to take so long if after the 2012 election, because I think the 2012 election is going to, and thanks for calling and raising the issue. I may be wrong on this, but I think not. I think people are already seeing it. The first casualty of the Republican voter disenfranchisement program is Newt Gingrich in Virginia. Because, you know, he turned in the 11,500 signatures. He only needed 10,000. But then they said, okay, but this year, unlike previous years, we're going to run you through the system that we're going to run voters through. So you got to make sure we got to double check the addresses against the names. And guess what? Sometimes people move and don't notify the Election Bureau. In fact, you know, every year, 7% of all Americans move. So Newt didn't make it, and neither did several others. So, you know, it's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy. And this is the direction that it's going. But in any case, I think that this election is going to be so bad. There's going to be so much money in it. It's going to be so obvious and so corrupt that there's going to be tremendous, after 2012, I think there's going to be tremendous pressure for movetoamend.org to, and you know, Bernie's got one now over at sanders.senate.gov to get one of these constitutional amendments passed that says corporations aren't people, money is not speech, and, you know, leave it at that. Dave, before I get to this, I got to tell you, one other thing I learned this weekend, this Christmas weekend that we spent with our kids in Portland, is how to embarrass your children. Bring a Geiger counter to dinner when you go to a restaurant. They actually made me leave it at home. I mean, just bringing the Geiger counter out and going through the refrigerator was like enough to really, really upset at least one of my children. And that's the bad news. The good news is I didn't find any radiation. You know, I had a Geiger counter and I was sweeping everything I could find, all the food and, you know, everything. And the highest I got was a little bit higher counter on the granite counter. And of course, granite is slightly radioactive. So it was a pretty high quality Geiger counter. So it didn't look so bad. Dave in Suffield, Connecticut. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Yeah, hi. First, I'd like to say that there's no such thing as safe atomic power.
Agreed.
Great.
Second of all, when I was a kid in junior high, the first girl I ever went out with died because the x-ray that they used on her teeth when she was a kid, the doctor didn't know what he was doing and put too much x-ray power into her jaw when they were x-raying it, and she died of cancer because of it.
Eesh.
And third, 3 days after Fukushima, I got what looks like a radiation burn on my right wrist. I had the doctor look at it, and she's puzzled. But there's no such thing as...
What'd you get the first downfall of rain from Japan on you or something?
No, that said that it was actually making it as far as Connecticut, the fallout.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt that the Fukushima fallout was coming down as rain all across the United States. But
yeah,
in a high enough dose to cause a radiation burn, that's I'd be very skeptical of that. But it's not impossible, Dave. Or it's, you know, maybe there was some kind of chemical on your coat or something that got through. Ken in Seattle. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Hey there. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, Ken, pick up the phone.
Hello.
Hey, what's up?
Have you got me?
I do.
Okay, I appreciate your program. Let me tell you about the radiation in the shoes. As a kid in D.C., in Tommy Can's shoe store, we used to go in there, even when we weren't accompanied by parents, and x-ray our toes. Then...
Yep.
In 95, I had to get a pacemaker, so I don't go through the machine at all.
Right.
And then I got a knee replacement. That's more metal. Then I had 9 weeks of radiation from cancer and many, many CT scans. And if I'm not glowing at night, it's a wonder. You know, and if I'm lucky, I'll be 75 next year.
Yeah, well, good luck on that. And, Ken, thank you for sharing your story. I wish you the very, very best. I'm not 75, but another person who was wiggling their toes. Breaking news, by the way, Senator Ben Nelson, the Democrat from Nebraska, is going to announce retirement today after two terms. The Republicans have dumped huge amounts of money into that race. And, you know, I suspect that there's a lot of people who are looking at Karl Rove coming at him with his $200 million slush fund that with undisclosed donors and virtually unlimited funds. And the Democrats are looking around, and there aren't the you know, any an investment in a Republican is an investment. You know, when the Koch brothers or a Wall Street billionaire gives money to Republicans will make sure that they continue to pay a maximum 15% income tax rate on capitalist gains taxes, and will continue to make sure that, you know, or do their best to make sure that there's no inheritance tax and all these other things. If a billionaire invests similarly in a Democrat, what they're doing is they're investing in raising their own taxes. And there are a few who have the integrity and honor to do that, and God bless them, but not that many. And whereas there's and now that corporations can invest money in politicians, corporations are always going to invest their money in Republican politicians. So a lot of Democrats now are going to be saying, oh, wait a minute. You know, unlimited money from corporations? Can't do that.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Just can't even go up against that. Can't even go up against it. So, we'll be back. We're going to check in with the Talk Radio News Service.
Oh, Hanukkah, come light the menorah. Let's have a party. We'll all dance a horror. Gather around the table.
Happy holidays to you. Here we are, the week between Christmas and New Year's and the tail end of Hanukkah, and I'm not sure where we are relative to any of anybody else's holidays, but I think Festivus is over. Talk Radio News brought to you by the new book Self-Empowerment, 9 Things the 19th Century Can Teach Us About Living in the 21st by Ellen Ratner and Ann Gaiman, and it is the woman who knows her cats, Victoria Jones, of the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Victoria.
I sure do. The 30 most important cats of 2011.
There you go. Thank you for that email this morning. That's great. You've got to put that on a blog someplace.
I have to. I definitely have to. Well, this first piece of news is news that hasn't happened yet, or some of it has, but the main piece hasn't, and the question is, will it? That is, will the president do a recess appointment to the National Labor Relations Board?
Right. He has to, otherwise it can't function. Right now it's dysfunctional because it doesn't have enough members. And then, you know, the corollary to that is, will he also do a recess appointment of Rob Cordray to head the Financial Services Bureau, Consumer Financial Protection, whatever it is, Bureau.
Exactly. Well, the National Labor Relations Board is very interesting because Craig Becker, his very controversial nomination, his time is up on December the 31st. He does have his names for replacements, 2 Democrats and 1 Republican, but there are some fascinating cases pending, which are incredibly important. One of them is that incoming employees sign mandatory arbitration agreements that prevent them from pursuing labor cases outside of an arbitration process. Another one is a question about whether online discussion of your superiors on social media constitutes a protected activity under labor law. Or not. Right. Another one is whether graduate students who are research or teaching assistants can be considered students or whether they're employees under the protection of labor law.
Mm-hmm.
And another one is about airport transportation, whether drivers are independent contractors or employees. In other words, whether they can innovate to make more money, set the terms of their work or not.
Right.
So these are all really important things, none of which, of course, can move ahead unless the National Labor Relations Board gets new people. And the time that he's going to have to do it, basically, because there is no recess right now, will be right when the Congress ends and just before it starts, which could be a half day, which is being considered by some Republicans, if he does that, to be a nuclear option.
Well, it's been done before. I mean, Teddy Roosevelt did it.
Right. Yeah, it hasn't been done in recent times, but
Teddy Roosevelt did it 30 times, in fact, and he did it in the second between the December 31st at midnight and January 1st. My recollection serves me right.
Exactly. Yes, he did a slew of them.
Yeah.
Also today, Iran today has issued a blunt warning saying it would block the Strait of Hormuz, which is the world's most important oil transit point, if Western powers, including the United States, attempt to impose an embargo on Iranian petroleum exports in the campaign to isolate Iran over its suspect nuclear energy program.
Well, that's interesting. And the Straits of Hormuz isn't that the waterway through which Saudi Arabia exports most of its oil?
Just about everybody does. It connects the Gulf of Oman to the Persian Gulf. Right. It's the route for one-third of the world's oil tanker traffic.
Wow.
So this is very, very serious. They say, we're not interested in any hostility. Our motto is friendship and brotherhood. But Westerners are not willing to abandon their plots.
Right. You know, there's a broad school of thought that thinks that the reason that the Japanese bombed us at Pearl Harbor was because Roosevelt blocked the Straits of Malacca, which was, you know, the waterway there between, as I recall, Malaysia and Borneo or something.
Mm-hmm.
Louise and I have actually sailed through there. It's pirate infested waters. That by blocking the Straits of Malacca, what we did was we cut off the oil supply going to Japan, and they felt that they were in a corner and they had no choice but to bomb us at Pearl Harbor. And it may or may not be historically accurate, but blocking people's oil supplies can have really, really, really significant consequences. I guess that's
huge.
The bottom line of that story.
Absolutely huge. And a story that's really been little noticed because of the Christmas holiday is that when President Obama signed the budget bill on Friday, he issued a signing statement. And in it, he claimed the right to bypass dozens of provisions that place requirements and restrictions on the executive branch, saying that he had well-founded constitutional objections to them. There was sections barring the use of money to transfer prisoners from Guantanamo Bay to the U.S., limiting the ability of the government to transfer them to the custody or control of foreign countries. He said he would do that in a way that avoided infringing on his powers, and he didn't say what that meant. He also singled out 14 provisions that he said infringed on his power to conduct foreign affairs. He also challenged a provision forbidding the use of funds to pay the salaries of four White House advisors, including the one who deals with climate change. He also challenged a section forbidding the use of money to alter or delay the transmission of a report by the Department of Homeland Security's privacy officer. He also cited his authority as commander-in-chief in raising objections to a provision that requires 30 days advance notice to Congress before any military exercises that will cost more than $100,000 in construction. I mean, and it goes on and on and on.
Wow.
And Attorney General Eric Holder says he may soon issue another signing statement about the National Defense Authorization
Act. That was going to be my question. Asserting that he's not taking the powers that people say that are included in that act, or that he doesn't believe that those powers are constitutional.
All Eric Holder is saying is that a statement is likely, and of course we just know that there are disputed provisions about the handling of terrorism suspects.
Right. That's going to be very interesting to see. We'll
yeah.
see how that plays out. And of course the signing statement is not necessarily binding on future presidents. That's
yeah.
the catch 22 in all this.
Right.
And in fact the Supreme Court has ruled that. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. Stay tuned for a rumble on voter ID. How can anyone, anywhere, anytime want to bounce people off the voter rolls? I'll ask.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the third hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you. The Bush administration spent several years and tens of millions of dollars. The estimates are between $40 and $70 million trying to track down voter fraud in the United States. Seven federal prosecutors chose not to go along with that and ended up getting fired. That's a whole scandal around that. But what they discovered, they actually nailed about 30 people after over a 3-year period. And what they discovered is that you're more likely to be struck by lightning than to live in a state in which genuine voter fraud happens, and that virtually all of the voter fraud they found fell into one of two categories. Either it was people who were felons, who lived in states where felons can't vote after they get out of prison and didn't realize it, or they were people like Mitt Romney, who claims that his legal residence is the basement of his son's house in Massachusetts, even though he lives in a multimillion-dollar mansion in California. Or Ann Coulter, who registered to vote at the address of her agent because your registered address becomes public and she didn't want that public. So when she voted, that was voter fraud, and she could have gone to jail for that in Florida. And the same thing with Mitt Romney. Horace Cooper is on the line with us. He is a legal commentator and senior fellow with the Heartland Institute. Heartland.org is the website. And Horace, I don't understand why you guys are so hysterical about voter fraud, particularly after the millions that the Bush administration did looking for it and not finding any.
Well, the real issue here is whether or not ghost voters, whether or not fraudulent voters ought to be given precedence over actual voters. And there are many legislatures across the country that say, if you are an actual voter, we want to count you. If you're not, we don't.
That's not the real issue. You know, you and I both know that the real issue is if you are black, if you are poor, if you don't own a car, if you live in a city and you don't have a driver's license, if you are elderly, the Republican Party doesn't want you voting. And all of the states that you just described that have passed those kinds of laws, all of the states that you just described that have passed those kinds of laws are controlled by Republican legislatures.
Actually, that's not true. It's not true in the case of Connecticut. It's not true in the cases of places like Texas, where the voter ID law went into effect before there was a Republican legislature in place, although they did have a Republican governor. It is simply not the case that the targeted groups are people who are not sympathetic to, quote, the GOP.
Let me, Horace, if I may.
Overwhelmingly support Republicans nationally. So the whole idea, it doesn't actually fit that the whole idea is let's just target people who are opposed to the GOP.
Okay, Horace, you know who Paul Weyrich is, don't you?
Yes, I do. I knew who he was.
You knew he was. Yeah, he died last year. Paul Weyrich was one of the lead consultants to the Reagan campaign, the man who was in charge of direct mail for Reagan. Some say he made Reagan's campaign. He worked on the George Herbert Walker Bush campaign. He worked on the George W. Bush campaign. Major Republican strategist, political strategist. Here is Paul Weyrich in 1980 as they're kicking off the Ronald Reagan campaign, speaking to a group of Christian activists, Jerry Falwell and his bunch, in their church. Paul Weyrich.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome, good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
So, you're going to tell me this is not a Republican strategy?
Paul Weyrich says that he is not interested in having every single person show up to vote and vote. That has very little bearing on this fact. The Supreme Court has consistently upheld over 75 years that there can be a minimum residency requirement. Legislature in all 50 states, even now including Wisconsin, agree you can't wake up on election day and decide you're ready to participate in the voter process.
Why not?
It can't actually be true.
Shouldn't it be all right?
That 49 states understood this principle, and then when Wisconsin did it, it was only a GOP scam or scandal and not just a recognition.
You know, in North Dakota, you don't even need to register to vote. You could just show up the day of the election. And frankly, shouldn't it be that way in every other state in the union?
I think it's up to each legislature to be able to decide that, and I don't think it's part of a conspiracy when legislatures say that they would like to have some kind of residential insurance that the committed voter actually understands the community that they live in, is committed to the interests of that particular community,
well, it certainly
has made an informed decision.
It's
a very reasonable position.
It certainly bit Newt Gingrich here in the butt a couple of days ago. In Virginia, they've got one of these laws, and the law says that when you vote, the address at which you're registered has to be identical to the address on your ID. And so if you live in Virginia and you moved, say you go to college, for example, you know, 9 months out of the year, even in the state, or if you have moved in the last year and you have not changed your address with the state, and 9%, 7% of Americans move every year. It's probably down a little bit right now because of the recession, but that's the average 7%. And so Newt turned in 11,500 signatures. And in the past, the Republican Party's rule had always been, if you can, you know, if this is a genuine registered Republican voter, that's fine. But this year they decided to go with the standards that the state applies, is going to apply to everybody when they show up at the polls, which meant that your ID has to match your address. And Newt didn't have 10,000 of those because, you know, a small percentage of people had moved. And Newt found himself on the outside looking in. Don't you think that we should have everybody participating?
I say good cheer to the state of Virginia. They're demonstrating that the rule is not designed to prefer Republicans over Democrats, and that they're applying this standard to everyone. And if you wish to participate in the Virginia process, you're going to have to keep up with the rules. Your example is an exceptionally good example of demonstrating that this is not about some partisan bias.
No, it's about making it harder to vote.
In 2008, Virginia, North Carolina, Florida, a number of places voted heavily for Barack Obama and did so while those jurisdictions had these rules in place. If you have a campaign and a candidacy that is appealing, you will get support among those who are duly eligible to participate. What is not acceptable is to allow ghost voters to come in and that those people get to decide who are elected representatives.
Horace, how many people in the last decade have been convicted of voter fraud? How many ghost voters? How many people who intentionally went to the polls with the plan of really screwing up the election?
In the state of Colorado, they had a campaign where they arrested nearly 9 people, people who were paid to round up people to register to vote unlawfully and mail-in ballots. They were rounding up people for travel, covering their expenses so they could register.
Right.
These
were examples of people violating the registration laws, but not of people actually voting. How many people in the last 10 years?
For the purpose of allowing votes to be cast.
I'll bet you Mitt Romney's $10,000 that you can't identify one election that has been flipped by phony voters.
Well, all your rich guys can come up with $10,000 for these.
No, I said I bet you Mitt Romney's money.
I'm going to stick with the facts here, and the facts are that there are increased.
The facts are that you guys are throwing 5 million people off the ballot this year, and most of them are people who live in cities and don't have cars and never have, which is predominantly people of color, people who are elderly, which is predominantly people who vote for Medicare and Social Security, and after the Republicans all voted to destroy Medicare, that constituency is seriously pissed off, and young people who are going to college, and you know they're who also tend to vote Democratic, and their college ID is not going to be accepted by the states.
That's your interpretation. I would say let's let this 2012 election bear out, and you're going to see at least 2 or 3 of those demographics shift their voting pattern, and it has nothing to do with registration rules. It has everything to do with policy appeal.
I just don't understand why anybody would want to say no, you can't vote, but I respect your right to say it. Horace Cooper, heartland.org. You can check it out.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So we will see Newt Gingrich, the first casualty of the Republican Voter Disenfranchisement Act. Okay, a 93-year-old Tennessee woman, Marie Diamond, posting this over at Think Progress Justice, the thinkprogress.org blog. 93-year-old Tennessee woman who cleaned the state capitol for 30 years, including the governor's office. This is the woman who cleaned the governor's office. Says she won't be able to vote for the first time in decades after being told this week that her state ID failed to meet new voter ID requirements. This is a woman who lived in the state capitol and did not own a car and was born at home delivered by a midwife in Alabama in 1918 and thus does not have a birth certificate. But she always had an ID that said that she was a government employee. And she used that as her ID to vote. I mean, you know, she was born in 1918 in the midwife in Alabama. She's 93 years old. And she's told, sorry. In fact, when she went to the driver's license clerk to say, you know, I want to vote this year, and they tell me that my ID as a government employee is no good because it's expired or the government ID isn't good enough, you know, so I need a driver's license. And the clerk said, oh, you must be an illegal alien. You don't have a birth certificate. Thelma Mitchell said she went to the state driver's license center last week after being told that her old state ID from her cleaning job in the governor's office would not meet new regulations for voter ID. This is mind-boggling. An African-American woman, 93 years old, cleaned the governor's office for 20 or 30 years, being accused of being an illegal immigrant. We have, you know, in the last, decade, I think it is, there have been something like 30 or 40 people, period, total, nationwide, who have been caught, quote, illegally voting. The vast majority of them, as I said earlier, have been people who were felons who were trying to vote in states where once you've been convicted of a felony, after you've served your time, after you've gotten off parole, in most states, you can vote again. But there are a number of states, I think it's 11 states, where you can't. And they happen to be in those states, and they didn't know that they couldn't vote. And so there's one guy just recently got arrested for illegal voting. So that happens, you know, 6, 8, 10, 12 times a year nationwide. And then you got people like Ann Coulter and Mitt Romney who registered a vote in one place. In Ann Coulter's case, it was her agent's house. In Mitt Romney, it's his son's house. But live in another place. And theoretically could be arrested for voter fraud. It's a non-existent problem. But by putting into place all of these ID requirements, the Republicans are doing a really, really great job making it hard to vote. And as Paul Weyrich said, I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by the majority of voters, never have been, never will be. In fact, frankly, our leverage in the election goes up as the voting populace goes down. This is what Republicans are all about. I think it's a tragedy that only about half of Americans who are eligible to vote vote to begin with. Shouldn't we make it 100%? Eric Holder, a week or two ago, gave a speech, and almost nobody noticed it, in which he said, you know, anybody who we know as a citizen should automatically be allowed to vote. It's like if you've got a Social Security number, you should be, that's your voter registration. And you can use it anywhere in the country. Why don't we just pass a law like that? Or actually, you'd have to pass it in every one of the states because the Constitution says each state gets to determine who votes and how. So that's fine. Let's create a model piece of legislation and get it out there. I mean, ALEC is doing this, right? The American Legislative Exchange Council with Koch brother money. They're putting together model legislation. They're putting together model legislation that says if you don't have a certain kind of ID and if you don't register by a certain date, then you can't vote. We're going to throw up as many barriers as possible, make it harder for college students to vote, make it harder for older people to vote, make it harder for people who live in cities who don't have cars to vote. Why? Because that list that I just read you are people who tend to vote Democratic, as with the big D, or Green, heaven forbid. Or progressive in Vermont, where the Progressive Party is still quite active. God bless them. This is nuts. A Tennessee agency told an 86-year-old World War II veteran that he had to pay an unconstitutional poll tax if he wanted to obtain an ID. I mean, it just goes on and on. Okay, so there's that. And then, as I mentioned in the first hour, I discovered over the weekend that we spent, Christmas weekend that we spent with our kids in Portland. Number one way to embarrass your children, when you go out to dinner, bring along a Geiger counter. They will not let you take it out and not let you examine the food. I actually didn't bring it to dinner. I just, the blowback I got just going through the refrigerator of one of my kids and stuff. Don't do that. They're all like Louise. It must be an inherited characteristic. I bring out, you know, here in Washington, D.C., I say to Louise, let's go out to dinner. I'm going to bring my Geiger counter and see, you know, if any of the food here. I want to go to like one of the places where they serve fish dishes and ask them if I can just go back into the kitchen and, you know, hey, you got any West Coast fish here? I just happen to have a Geiger counter. And she's like, no, I will not go out to dinner with you if you bring that thing. It's like, oh, man, no sympathy. And that, but she did go along. I mean, to Louise's credit, when we went, we were flying back home from Portland on Monday morning, yesterday morning, and they said, very nice lady at the TSA said, please step into the Chertoff Porno X-ray scanner so we can strip you naked and expose you to radiation. And I said, I'll take the grope. And Louise also said, no thanks on the X-rays. Good on her.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
On the other hand, the result of our saying, I'll take the grope instead of the X-rays, was that we had to wait around 15 minutes, and, you know, had we been tight, we would have missed our flight. Yep, that's the good, the bad, and the very, very gompiously ugly, brought to you by EdisonFactor.com. The good, Occupy Minnesota. Patriots with a 99% movement helped save a woman in Minnesota from eviction. Monique White was on the verge of losing her home after Freddie Mac threatened to evict her, so she turned to her local Occupy movement for help. Sure enough, Patriots swarmed her home to offer moral and physical support. As a result, Freddie Mac has postponed her eviction and is now looking into ways to help her stay there. This is just the latest success story thanks to the Occupy Our Homes movement that also helped an Iraq war veteran avoid an eviction in Atlanta last week. Keep up the good work. The bad. The NYPD. On Sunday, demonstrators returned to Zuccotti Park in Manhattan to celebrate Christmas with a giant potluck, but leave it up to the NYPD to play the role of the Grinch. Police stopped volunteers from bringing any food into the park, again on Christmas, to feed the hungry demonstrators. Unclear if police posted a Don't Feed the Patriots sign as well. New York police refused to comment on why they didn't allow any food in the park. On the brighter side, though, no pepper spray was deployed. I suppose you can call that a minor Christmas miracle. And the very, very ugly... Come on. There you go. Ouch. Mitt Romney. Romney turned into the ultimate pander bear over the weekend while at a campaign stop in New Hampshire. In a bid to attract college voters, Romney made this wild promise, saying,
what I can promise you is this. When you get out of college, if I'm president, you'll have a job. If President Obama is reelected, you will not be able to get a job.
Right. So says the guy who made a living firing people and who thinks federal Pell Grants are a waste of time and money. What will be Mitt's next empty promise? How about everyone gets a cute puppy if he gets elected? One that hopefully wasn't strapped to the roof of Mitt's car. That's very, very ugly. I got to tell you, just to politics for a moment here. More than a moment. Jeez, Perry and Romney lead spending blitz in Iowa that tops $10 million. Incredible. But the big news is that Ben Nelson, whose hairpiece I have been making fun of for years and years, is suggesting that maybe some of his weird behavior is the result of it being a rabid weasel, actually. Yes, in fact, we even have a sound effect for Ben Nelson's hair. That he's not going to run for re-election. He's a Democrat from Nebraska who famously took the public option out of the health care program, made sure it wasn't there or whatever. I don't know. And Ben Nelson has never been my favorite Democrat. In fact, he's been probably among my least favorite Democrats. And I'm telling you, the Democrats are freaked out because the Republicans have dumped a couple of million bucks into Ben Nelson's district already in attack ads, making Ben Nelson look bad, which isn't hard to do. And the fact of the matter is that in Massachusetts, where Elizabeth Warren is running, an unabashed progressive, liberal, you know, fill in the blank. She is kicking Scott Brown's ass. I mean, she is seriously kicking that boy's behind. And on the other hand, in Nebraska, you got Ben Nelson, who's a conservative Dem, and he's like vulnerable. Shouldn't there be a lesson here for the Democratic Party? You know, start, they're talking about, you know, bringing Bob Kerry out of retirement, who lives in Nebraska, used to be a senator for Nebraska. Find a progressive, a genuine progressive. Find a Bernie Sanders. Find an Elizabeth Warren. Find a real progressive. And you'll win the election. Because that's where the American people are at. I'm telling you, you know, when David Aspin, I was debating me on Fox Business News last Thursday, and he was like, "You realize you're to the left of Ron Wyden because Ron Wyden's with Paul Ryan." And I'm like, "Well, Ron Wyden's become a useful idiot, at least on this topic." It's like, find real progressives and run them, and they will win because they represent where America's at. Gary in San Francisco, it says you disagree with me, so you go to the front of the line. Gary, what's up? What do you disagree with me about?
Well, hi, Tom. I've worked as a poll worker many, many times, probably will continue many, many times. Mm-hmm. And it sounds to me like you wish it was set up as this, "Oh, I want to vote, man, but I'm not on the paperwork. Can I vote, man?" You know, we can't.
Which is how it is
that.
In South Dakota right now, yeah.
Well, that shouldn't be that way.
Why not?
Because that is the front door to all kinds of voter fraud. How do you know that person that's sitting in, that's standing in front of you wanting to vote, man? How do you know they haven't been to 15 precincts already?
Well, I agree with Eric Holder, you know, that if somebody has a Social Security number,
oh, that's
they're
bad,
a U.S.
right
citizen.
Away.
And
Eric Holder, who has declared war on California, that Eric Holder, you're him in front of
Gary,
me.
Gary, I'm sorry. This may play really well on right-wing talk radio that you obviously listen to a lot. But, you know, if that's your argument, that Eric Holder has declared war on California and therefore we shouldn't let people vote, why bother? Robert in Ironwood, Michigan. Hey, Robert, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Hope you and yours are having a happy holidays.
Thank you, and I hope the same. We are, and I hope the same for you. What's up?
Well, I did. I had my kids over for Christmas dinner.
Oh, that's nice.
And we, of course, started talking politics.
Okay. Sometimes that's nice.
Well, my son said, "It's all a game. All this thing of America is just a game."
Yeah.
And then we came up with, yeah, and the 99% are trying to play the game of life. And the 1% are playing Monopoly and Risk.
Yeah, yeah, I don't disagree. It is a game, and to some extent, the game is rigged, and that's why we need to get a critical mass of people involved.
Well, what happens at the end of Monopoly or Risk, Tom?
You end up with one person who owns everything,
and the rest of the people dump the board in his face.
Yeah, there you go, Robert. That's the solution, Robert. Thanks a lot for the call. Vi in Donovan, Missouri. Am I mispronouncing that, Vi?
Yeah, just a little bit. It's Donovan.
Donovan, okay, Missouri. So what's up?
Referring back to your previous guest, I would like for you to comment on ALEC legislation and voter repression laws.
Sure.
That
well,
seem to be cropping up way too frequently in our country.
Right. My understanding, and Ian Millhiser is the guy who's the expert on this, and we've had him on as a guest, so this is secondhand information, he's over at the Center for American Progress's blog, Think Progress, and you can find a lot of good documentation on this over there, is that virtually all, if not all, of the voter suppression laws that have been passed by various states came out of ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, funded in large part by the Koch brothers, as model legislation. This is at ALEC meetings, you have corporations who pay $100,000 each to be represented next to state representatives and state senators, state legislators who pay $100 each to be there. And it's about 50-50, legislators and corporate representatives. And they sit and collaborate collaboratively, and virtually all the representatives are Republicans, And we got this story from a Democrat from Wisconsin, a Democratic member of the House of Representatives, who actually showed up at an ALEC meeting, registered, paid his $100, showed up. They figured out that he was a Democrat, and they threw him out. And after a day, but he said they sat in a room with the corporations and the Republicans and said, okay, here's legislation on tobacco, here's legislation on pharmaceuticals, here's legislation on guns, here's legislation on voters, whatever. And they all get to vote, the corporations and the legislators. And if there's a consensus, or if there's a majority, rather, that this is good legislation that we like, then all of the state legislators take that into their states and try and pass it. And ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, appears to be the place where most of this voter suppression legislation is originating. So, Vi, you've touched right at the heart of this thing, and ALEC has been flying under the radar for 30 years, and now they have been outed, and I mean, they're the source of most of the legislation that's happening up in Wisconsin and in Ohio. John Kasich, Scott Walker, in Michigan, you've got, you know, this crazy Rick Snyder here in Michigan who not only is cutting unemployment benefits from 26 weeks down to 20 weeks, but is giving $30 billion in tax breaks to big corporations and its rich buddies. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. Vi, thank you for the call. Thank you very much for the call. This is just like way too much. Daniel in Riffle, Colorado, it says, you disagree with me too. Okay, go for it.
Yes, sir. How are you today?
I am very well, thank you.
I'm a Republican, but I like to listen to your show on
okay.
XM. And,
okay.
And so, I agree with you sometimes and disagree with you sometimes.
But we have just a minute to the break. That's why I'm trying to move you along.
Okay. What I'm concerned about is if you only use the Social Security number,
right.
If someone comes in on a visa to work, they wouldn't be a U.S. citizen, but they would have a Social Security number.
All right.
And so you could have some voter fraud in that way.
I'm not so worried about that. Frankly, I'm not. I don't think that you're going to find, that illegal aliens show up to vote. In fact, history shows that the last place they want to get caught is near a polling booth. And, B, that even if they did, that they would swing an election.
I'm talking about people who lawfully immigrate to the U.S.
Okay, well, even lawful immigrants. I don't think that they're going to show up in a voting booth either. And if they did, I don't think they're going to swing an election. And I think the cost to all of us of keeping large, you know, of disenfranchising just this year, 5 million people, saying to 5 million people, sorry, you're a legal U.S. citizen and you can't vote, that cost to us is greater than the cost to us as a democracy of having a few thousand, let's say it was even that high a number, right? A few thousand people who are, you know, H-1B visa holders or whatever, voting. I just, you know, I don't see it happening, Daniel. I'm not afraid of that. I'm not buying into the Fox News fear machine. Be afraid, be very afraid on that issue. Ain't going to happen.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Keeping students from the polls. This is interesting. The New York Times weighed in on it. I'll share this with you, and we'll take more of your calls right after this.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Kyle in Detroit, Michigan. Hey, Kyle, what's up?
Hey, Tom. It's great to talk to you. Hey, I just wanted to talk a little bit about this fear-mongering from the right on this voter fraud. It's not there.
No, it's not. And Bush spent millions of dollars and had a whole bunch of federal attorneys and said, I want you to go after voter fraud. And they're like, hey, we're supposed to be finding drug dealers and murderers and things. And he's like, no, go after voter fraud. And they couldn't find it. They spent tens of millions of dollars and they couldn't find it. You're more likely to be struck by lightning in the United States than to live in a congressional district where one instance of voter fraud happens. It doesn't happen. What is happening is election fraud. Election fraud is happening. And that's where, you know, you've got these voting machines that you have no idea what's actually coming out of them, where you've got redshift happening, where the exit polls no longer conform with what people are actually voting. And when we look at that in other countries, we say, hey, it's a fraudulent election. Now, for some reason, we don't say that about ourselves, but we will say that about the other countries. And but we don't have voter fraud is an invented problem, invented by Republicans as an excuse to disenfranchise people.
It sounds like something that Frank once said, hey, look, you can make this work.
Yes, of course, of course.
You know, I mean, I know back in 2003 I lost my job, and then I suffered a repo on my vehicle.
Yeah.
So by the 2004 election, I did not renew my license because I didn't have a vehicle. I was told not, you can't vote. And I said, well, wait a minute, I'm in Michigan. We don't have that law yet.
Right.
But I just think people that have normally voted, don't be afraid to say no. And they say, okay, we have to get an official.
Yeah. It's like your idea is out of date. Hey, it was in date once. I'm still me.
Yeah, I have my voter identification card. I have my birth certificate. What else do you want?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Here's my utility bills. Don't be afraid to say no, and make sure you stand up to them.
This is a good reason, Kyle, why people should volunteer to be poll workers too. Show up at the election site. This is part of my whole show up rant. Show up to be a poll worker. Show up to be the committee precinct person. Whole different. That's like taking over the party. But the poll workers, sometimes they actually get paid. But, you could participate in the process as well. Kyle, thanks a lot for the call. Jeanette in Seattle. Hey, Jeanette, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was calling about regarding the airport security.
Oh, yeah.
I'm from Seattle, and I went to Atlanta at the beginning of the month and opted out of the scanner. Mm-hmm. And they were really nice at the airport. I got my pat down, and I think I prompted the guy behind me to do the same thing. Because he asked for one right after. But anyway, same thing. We waited like 10 minutes or whatnot. But anyway, I compared it to, I've actually been to a prison or a few prisons here in Washington State to visit. And they treat you like they do at a prison. They search you like they do when you go in to visit someone. The way they put their hands like inside your bands of your pants and
right.
underneath the wire of your bra, all that stuff. Yeah, it compared a lot to going to visit someone in prison. So anyway.
Wow. Yeah, I've not had that experience, but that comports with Louise's description of how she apparently her pat down was much more invasive than mine was. But it's stupid to begin with. This is theater. This is nothing more than theater. And the punishing you by making you wait if you don't use the Chertoff porno X-ray scanners is just. Part of the let's make another $30 million for Michael Chertoff, the lobbyist who, former head of Department of Homeland Security and now the lobbyist who sells these porno scanners to the TSA. And it's a crime. Jeanette, thank you for the call and thanks for sharing your story with us. Ted in Carsonville, Michigan. Hey, Ted, what's up?
Yeah. Hi, Tom. I'm just calling about the Governor Snyder tax bill he passed into law this year.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that he's financing on the backs of unemployed. Well, he's also financing on the backs of retirees. Prior to this year, government pensions were not taxed, and private pensions were taxed at the first $42,000. Well, that's all gone away now, so helping to pay.
So working people, when they're retired, get to pay income tax on the pension funds that they are put in years earlier, whereas Governor Snyder is passing out tens of billions of dollars in tax breaks for transnational corporations and multimillionaires.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, okay. Jeez.
It's
so sad to hear this about the state that I was born and grew up in and I still consider home, Michigan, that you've got such a crazed right-wing governor and legislature. I sure hope the voters of Michigan wake up as we go through the next election cycle. Thanks for the call. Joseph in Loxahatchee, Florida. Do I have that?
Yep, they got that right.
Hey, Joseph.
Thanks for taking
up?
My call, Tom.
Sure.
Isn't the real voting fraud in the machines?
Well, as I said, I think I have a real problem with the voting machines, and I think we should go back to using paper like all the European countries did. A couple of them tried out the machines. Holland tried out the machines for one election cycle and said, hey, wait a minute, we can't trust this. And then the companies came to the European countries and they said, oh, we get to own the software. We get, it's proprietary. And the European countries were like, what? Are you nuts?
Yeah.
Well,
in Fort Lauderdale, my vote was flipped three times.
In front of your face?
I moved up to West Point. What?
Right in front of your face? You saw it happen?
Right in front of my face.
Wow.
Right on the screen. It was a touch screen. And George Bush came up every time I voted in the 2004 election.
For John Kerry. Amazing.
Yeah, I voted for John Kerry, and George Bush came up three times.
Wow. Wow.
And when I moved up here to West Palm Beach area as a nonpartisan voter rather than Democratic voter, I was told to put my paper ballot in the center machine, the white one, not the one on the left, not the one on the right.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Okay, Joseph, thank you very much for the information. Voter ID laws have been passed. Louise, can you give me that list real quick? I'll read it. No? Yeah. Okay. Since 2003, voter ID laws have been passed in Alabama, Colorado, Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, Indiana, New Mexico, Washington, Georgia, Ohio, Georgia, Missouri, Utah, Idaho, Oklahoma, Kansas, Rhode Island, Wisconsin, Alabama, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas. I think I got a couple in there twice, but those are the states where the Republicans have succeeded in saying, poor? No, I don't think you're going to vote. Student? No, don't think you're going to vote. Don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. Participate. Occupy something. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.